We have a small retail center that we purchased in one of the communities that we have a mobile home park. We would have never done that if we hadn't been part of the mastermind group and connecting with people that kind of stretched us and expanded our knowledge base and comfort level.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I am your host, Justin Dixon, and I've got Ryan Hill on the podcast today. Super interesting. He spent 21 years as an educator, as a science teacher, and then a principal, and just 6 months ago left to be a full-time real estate investor. He is the COO of Suncrest Capital, and they focus on mobile home parks. They've got them across Kansas City, Idaho, and a few other states. So super interesting. They kind of started out doing syndication, so raising capital for each deal, and now they're launching an open-ended fund. But the fund model that they have is a little bit unique from what I've heard. So we'll dig into that a little bit. But yeah, super fascinating to have Ryan on the podcast, and let's welcome him in. All right, Ryan, man, thank you for being on the pod. Really great to have you here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, Justin.
Awesome. Well, let's jump right in. Give us kind of a quick overview of who you are and kind of what you're doing in real estate.
Yeah, for sure. So my current position, I'm Chief Operating Officer for Suncrest Capital. We specialize in mobile home communities, managing them and growing them, improving them. We have an RV park and a small retail center in Iowa. So before that, this is now 6 or 7 months of full time in that position, in that role. So I've just recently transitioned from my W-2, which I was in education for 21 years, about 13 years as a high school science teacher and coach in sports, and became an elementary school principal for like the last 7 years of my journey in that field. And like during that time, I was also a real estate agent, a residential real estate agent for 13 years, kind of overlapping both. Had a great real estate partner who was also a teacher at the time. You know, his teacher salary where we were living near Seattle was a little difficult to afford childcare at that point. So needed to find another way to make some income. So that's when I started the residential real estate, right when the market crashed about 2008. So that was sweet.
That might have actually been a good time to start, because then, at least you were able to, cut your teeth. And then, as the market kind of started a rebound, you at least kind of had some momentum, I guess, maybe.
Yeah. I didn't have to rely on the real estate income. But right. The little bit that did come in was nice. But, that time, and I think probably we're seeing it now with how the housing market is, it starts to weed out some of the realtors that kind of got in when it was smooth sailing and didn't know how to maybe navigate those rougher waters. So that's like essentially my work background. I've got two kids, 16-year-old and 22-year-old, just graduated college. And my wife and we moved to the Boise area about 3 years ago from the Seattle area.
Okay.
3.5 years ago. So at that point is when I didn't want to rebuild my real estate presence, because most of my stuff was from referrals by that point. I'd been researching mobile home parks and listening to podcasts, connecting with mobile home park owners, trying to get in on more of the investment side of multifamily.
Okay.
And my wife and I, we found our first small park. It was a 19-space community just south of Kansas City.
Okay.
And so, I'd been searching for a good year and a half through cold calling, looking at Crexie and LoopNet and connected with brokers. And that first deal was an owner finance deal. So there's a whole story there we could dive into if you're interested. But that's kind of how I transitioned into this space. And now we own 20 mobile home parks and the RV park and the retail space.
Got it. And so I'm kind of curious as we kind of, we'll definitely dive into a lot of that, because there's a lot of interesting pieces, because, mobile home parks are not, when you talk about syndications and things like that, typically people are doing multifamily. That's what I do. So mobile home parks are, kind of interesting and a little bit diversified. So I guess maybe talk a little bit about kind of your how did you figure out mobile home parks was kind of your area of focus? Because obviously you were doing residential sales, right? You were kind of a real estate agent, obviously, in addition to being an educator. And then, so how did you kind of land on mobile home parks as kind of like your niche?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I had run into a couple of people that were involved in the industry, and it was something that was interesting to me. And then as they explained, like essentially, you know, it's kind of like a horizontal apartment building where you can add floors to it. And like my real estate partner, Brett Bowman, he's more on the investor and the syndication side, but he likes to use that analogy that a lot of the communities that we purchase have maybe 30, 40% vacant lots that you can infill, bring a home in. And so any, you know, you bring a home in, it adds anywhere from $30,000 to $50,000 of value to your property based on, you know, just the cap rate and the lot rent and all that. But it was just through some happenstance with connecting with people that had ties to the industry.
Yeah.
Got me interested in it. And so from there, just doing some reading on the internet. And then there's a number of good podcasts out there now that can educate you on the basics. They don't necessarily, it's through a lot of rose-colored glasses. So you have to kind of know what you're...
Yeah.
I've learned those the hard way, unfortunately, but I think a lot of us have.
Yeah. No, it's funny because I started out and my wife and I bought a duplex kind of, that was our first investment back in 2019. And then we listen to Bigger Pockets like all the time. And so every episode, there's somebody that's super successful in a niche of real estate. And, you know, Brandon Turner was kind of into mobile home parks at that point. So I was like, well, if it's good enough for him, you know, might as well dig into it. And so we started sending mailers out to mobile home park owners and just trying to, you know, we were chasing the shiny object essentially. Yep. But yeah, it's super fascinating. So maybe like, you know, people that maybe listen to this podcast are, you know, they're W-2 workers. Typically they make good money. They want to find other passive investment options outside of, you know, just the real, the stock market and the, you know, their company's 401k. Kind of the multifamily syndication space is fairly standard or normal. Like there's a lot of people that do it. Mobile home parks are a little bit different. Maybe talk a little bit about the metrics and are you guys syndicating these? Is that how you're financing or bringing in equity for these deals? And maybe just talk a little bit about, you know, the economics and some of the returns that you guys are seeing in the mobile home space.
Sure. Yeah. Most of these have been syndicated. So we've typically purchased portfolios. So anywhere from 2 to 6 of these communities combined. So the largest one we just closed on this last September, 6-park portfolio in Springfield, Missouri, which we already had we have a presence there and a foothold. So I think we're up to like 10 communities in that market. That was about an $18 million deal. Okay. So we raised about $8 million for investor money through a syndication. So kind of the metrics we look for is if, especially for like a new market, 50 to 100,000 in population, 40,000 in median income and above, 100,000 plus in median home price. And the reason that's important is, you know, we're looking to, our model is we don't want to own these homes. Mm-hmm. They do. They want to own the homes, and there's a potential higher return, but I don't want to fix toilets and have
there's more risk. It's like an owning an apartment building, right? If you own the mobile home park, you just own the grass and the, you know, the actual like cement. So
yeah. And unfortunately the utilities, which are pretty aged,
need
replacing, but yeah, it's, so we want to just rent the land essentially. So we're selling off these homes, and brand new mobile homes that we're bringing in are anywhere from 80 to 100,000 purchase price, right? For brand new ones. So you are competing against some of the single family homes if it's closer to that mark. But used ones, it can be anywhere from, you know, handyman special for 10 or 15,000 up to 50,000 for you know, a used home that's fixed up. That's why it's important to look for some of those big metrics when you're entering a new market. So the typical like investor rate of return or IRR, and some of your folks are probably familiar with that we aim for is about 20%, which it can be higher. That seems to be a little bit higher than most, but we try to be pretty conservative with our underwriting. And, and with the mobile home park space, there's essentially like, there's just a couple of levers that to increase the value. So infill those vacant lots, of course. And then lot rents typically tend to be, you know, mom and pops haven't raised these lot rents for quite a while.
Yep.
And we are not in the business of going in and blasting lot rents. This is affordable housing. We want to protect affordable housing. but we also want to make sure that the value of the land is the best use is a mobile home community. Mm-hmm. So many of these are going away every year. I think it's about a net 90 are disappearing every year.
Oh, wow. So okay.
Roughly 100 a year across the country. And most of it is rezoning for higher and better use. Might be apartments, might be commercial real estate. And a lot of the times, if those lot rents remain artificially low, then the value isn't there to keep them as manufactured home communities. So you do have to get them up to a certain market rent to, and of course, you know, to the investor returns are important too. But we want to keep affordable housing affordable for folks. For sure.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important. Obviously, we're in I live in Austin, Texas, and housing is very unaffordable here, especially single family houses and even apartments to that extent. So yeah, I think that's awesome what you guys are doing. I want to kind of talk a little bit about your transition from kind of the W-2 world, because you were kind of working two jobs. You were working as a educator, a principal, and then a real estate agent. But before we jump into that, I want to take a quick sponsor break. So stick around and we'll jump into that right after this.
Whether you're trying to hire a full-time employee or a contractor to fill a gap, Hire Tomorrow can help. Hire Tomorrow is a boutique recruitment firm that has successfully filled sales and marketing, human resources, and technology positions with companies ranging from startups to Fortune 500. If you're struggling to find the right talent, check out HireTomorrow.com or reach out to recruiting@HireTomorrow.com to see how they can help.
All right, we are back with the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast with Ryan Hill. So before the break, we were talking a little bit about kind of your transition from working two jobs as an educator, principal, as well as a residential real estate agent. I guess I'm curious, were you getting involved in the investing side while you were working as a, you know, W-2 as an educator and a real estate agent?
Yeah, I'd say like the investment side for that first part would be really it for my wife and I. And to get the down payment on that, we used a HELOC on our home.
Okay.
So I think it was 81,000, something like that. You know, as far as the transition goes, because it is really working two jobs and it can seem like two full-time jobs, you know, I get home from my day job being a principal, and then I'm working on park operations, trying to source new deals, connecting with new investors. So early on, it was just me, really.
Yeah.
My wife was supportive, but trying to make those connections with people, sending out the mailers and licking the envelope, you know, the stamps on the envelope.
Yeah, right.
And trying to follow up with that type of stuff. And then just figuring out how to create like an LLC and just the very basics, right, of what you need to do to help protect yourself with these types of assets and properties. So it was just a lot of time grinding on the business side of things, learning how to find deals, source deals, off market, broker relations. So it takes time. It's a grind.
Right.
But it's worked out. I saw the future of kind of where I am now in just working on real estate full time. And eventually, yeah, we'll get to a point where I can be more passive in an LP on our own deals and hire people that are doing the things that I'm doing. But right now it's still building up this business and working on it that way. But yeah, it is like two full-time jobs. You just have to be prepared for that.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, so you kind of, your path was less around, I'm going to take the money that I'm making from my W-2 and from the residential space. And instead of doing, I'm going to say passively investing in mobile home parks or multifamily or whatever, you're like, no, I see the future. I want to become, you know, a full-time real estate professional and, mm-hmm. you know, focus on these things. So you kind of were, your mindset was really around figuring out when you can make that jump from W-2 and residential real estate agent to, I want to do this commercial stuff full time. How did you kind of make that leap? And what did you do kind of mindset wise and financial foundation wise, like to get yourself prepared for that, cutting the W-2 salary cord?
Yeah. And I've heard this from others too. You need to know what that number is to make it worth it for you. And so I essentially took a pay cut to go into this, but the upside, the portfolio value is, I think, gosh, we're up to 35 or 40 million now with assets under management. So once those start refinancing and that starts coming to fruition, it will be magnitudes better. So just working with my wife on how much do we really need to still be happy and comfortable, and but we don't don't necessarily need all the extras, and I'm working from home. I'm not, you know, I don't need to be driving around, and I do fly around to the properties every once in a while and due diligence and stuff. But just knowing what your number is for making that jump out. And for us, it was just happened to be less than I was making as a principal to get by. And as we're building this portfolio and, you know, this wealth. So that, I think that was the biggest key, is once we hit that number and being able to afford it, that, okay, we're doing it.
Yeah. No, I think that's interesting. And it's always important to have that supportive other half, right? Mm-hmm. I had that in my wife, Allison. We downgraded our lives at a point where a lot of our friends were buying bigger houses, having kids, like doing that whole thing. And we were like, no, we, you know, and this was 2019 that mm-hmm. we were both still working W-2 jobs. And then, you know, my goal was to early January 2020, quit my, you know, very nice paying salary job and start a recruiting business and fully focus on real estate investing. You know, nobody knew that COVID was going to happen at that point and kind of shut both of those things down for a bit. But it wouldn't have happened if my wife wasn't supportive and being like, okay, we're going to consciously make a move to, I think you said you moved locations, right? So you moved from where you were to a new location. We went from living in a very nice condo in downtown Philly to living in a smaller apartment outside in the burbs. And so you're making these decisions with the bigger picture, the goal in mind, right? So how long did it take you to kind of build up the financial foundation and the courage and the mindset and all that stuff to kind of make that, okay, I'm going to go in tomorrow and today's my last day. I'm going to go in and just, you know, put in my notice.
It is a scary thing. It plays tricks on your mind. And am I making the right decision? And this is, you know, my W-2, especially education, super solid. You're going to, you know, you get a paycheck every month. I'm going to make this much more every year. To, if we screw this up, like, I'm going to be needing to find another job or jump back into education or whatever. It is a scary thing. So we bought that first park in the summer of 2019, and I just went full-time like 6 months ago. So 3 years or so.
Yeah.
And really, like Suncrest, we just started Suncrest about 2.5 years ago. So it took about 2 years, I think.
Okay. So you had started the Suncrest business with your business partner, and you were kind of looking for deals. And then, you know, over that 2 year or so period, then you're like, okay, now I'm prepared to cut the W-2 cord. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And it was really, so Brad is my business partner, and he, you know, like our strengths complement each other very well. He'd had experience in multifamily and syndications, had been kind of a junior partner in underwriting syndicated deals. And so, like, without his partnership, I wouldn't have probably made it to this point now, for sure. It would have taken much longer because I didn't have that mindset at the time. I just had this small property. I was looking for another small property because that's kind of what I could afford. So it changed the mindset when it's like, hey, we're going to use other people's money and buy these bigger properties, and it's going to be good for them. It's going to be good for us. And here we go.
Yeah. Did you get into any kind of like mentorship, or was it just kind of you and your partner kind of figuring out like, hey, we need to go bigger, we need to go to bigger parks, and kind of have that mindset shift? Or did you lean on anybody else other than obviously podcasts and things like that? Yeah. But was there any formal like, hey, I have this coach or this mentor or anything?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and it was after like when Brett and I first met. So we were part of, it's a commercial academy. So it's a commercial real estate mastermind group.
Okay.
So it's Scott Shields. I hadn't heard of him before. We connected with another mobile home park owner that has been part of that group for 10 plus years. And they focus more on like retail and in industrial and apartments. So not a whole lot of mobile home park owners in that group. But that's also how we diversified into, you know, we have a small retail center that we purchased in one of the communities that we have a mobile home park. We would have never done that if we hadn't been part of the mastermind group and connecting with people that kind of stretched us and expanded our knowledge base and comfort level.
Yeah, I think it's super important. When I jumped out in January 2020, prior to that, I had been underwriting the 100 plus unit apartment complexes. And, you know, it was interesting and exciting to look at, but I had no idea what the heck I would do if I found one that made sense, right? I had no track record. I didn't have the capital to do it. I didn't have a network of investors that were like, hey, yeah, I'll write you, you know, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 check to go after this multi-million dollar project. So, just you two in the business, you and Brett?
Yeah, we're the co-founders. We have a third partner, Matt. He super important key partner with us. He's underwriting genius, really. He would never tell you that, but he is like just very talented. And now we've built up a team. We have VAs, virtual assistants, that help us with our underwriting out of India, that help do our bookkeeping and just a ton of other tasks from the Philippines.
Okay.
That's how we've been able to scale, I guess, one of the mechanisms we've used to scale. But yeah, so anyway, it's helping us quite a bit by utilizing that type of talent for the price.
How do you guys divide and conquer amongst the three of you? It sounds like Matt does the underwriting. You're the COO. Like, what's your role? Mm-hmm. Who's raising the capital from the limited partners? And who typically are they? Are they family offices, or are they just retail investors that are similar to people that listen to this podcast that are just hardworking people, have money, and they, you know, want to find other places to put it?
I think it's all of the above as far as the investors we've been able to attract. So like Brett, he knows how to do the syndications. He's more on the investor relations. I've been able to meet a number of investors as well, but Brett speaks that language very well and understands. I'm on the operations side of things as my main role. So I oversee operational efficiencies and home sales, due diligence when we find a new community. Usually I'm leading that charge as well.
Okay.
And then Matt, he is mainly on the underwriting side, but he's also done some project management and due diligence alongside with me. So,
yeah. How long is your hold period typically? Are these, obviously you're syndicating, so you need to return proceeds to your investors and I make sure the returns are there, but how long are your typical hold periods or business plan?
So all of our underwriting for our syndications, and side note, we've started an open-ended fund. So I can talk a little bit more about that later, but for our syndications, they're 10-year holds. Our typical model is to refi by year five. So anywhere between year three and year five.
Okay.
Return 100% of investor money, and they still get the returns based on their percent of ownership. Like some of it is a 50-50. Most of the time it's like a 70-30 split. So 70% to the investors, 30% to the general partners. That'd be us. So any returns after that, it's that still that 70-30 split that they'd be getting until the 10-year mark where we either refinance again or we will choose to sell the properties.
So if I'm a passive investor, I put in, call it 100 grand, and I'm assuming I'm getting some type of cash flow return during that first 3-5 years. You refinance, I get my 100 grand back, and then it's kind of an infinite return for me because I don't have any capital in the deal, but I still own an equity chunk and I get a split of the equity or of the cash flow essentially.
Exactly. So our typical is 8% on the investor return. And then it's, you know, a waterfall after that. So it's that 70-30 split up to 20% IRR. And then after 20%, then usually we do a 50-50. So some of the listeners will understand that. Others might have to.
Yeah, no, that's waterfalls are, it's a different structure. And obviously there's hurdles that need to be hit to change or get to the next level. Mm-hmm. So no, it's super interesting. And how, what's the oldest property that you have? And meaning, have you got to the refinance phase yet to realize that, hey, yeah, we are able to return 100% of capital?
Yeah. So since Suncrest started like 2.5-3 years ago, so our oldest properties are that old, basically.
Okay, got it.
3 years. So we haven't refied any of those yet. My wife and I we've refied our first community, our first park, and used the proceeds to continue to develop that one and invest and such. But the interest rates we've gotten on most of these were still when interest rates were good.
Okay. So
we're going to weather whatever length we're in right now until rates come back down. But we feel like the timing will be just about right for that 3-5 year mark.
Yeah, probably close to that five, especially from the earlier ones probably. But
yeah. But we underwrite with, you know, our assumptions on the refi. So say we've gotten like a 3.5% on a 4 portfolio, but our exit is at a 6%. And that was 2 years ago when we were underwriting that. So, and that's kind of where we're at right now. We could get a 6% interest rate on a loan. So typically are pretty conservative on underwriting. And what we found is we're hitting our underwriting model pretty well, like even with where we're at right now with the economy. But
yeah, I wanted to kind of touch on that a little bit because we're recording this late February 23. Interest rates are high, inflation's still high, and you know, there's looming recession and fears out there, all that stuff. What's your outlook for this year as far as like, are you guys still looking for deals, or are you kind of sitting on the sidelines waiting for this kind of to shuffle, you know, settle itself out?
Yeah, great question. We're underwriting deals every week. We probably have, since January 1, have probably underwritten 24 deals.
Okay.
We've made offers on maybe 5 or 6 of them, and none of them have been accepted.
Got it.
So what we're seeing is that seller expectations have not caught up to the reality of the market and the interest rates.
Okay. I was going to ask about that, because that's, I'm seeing similar in the multifamily space, is that one, there's less deal flow right now than there was at this point last year. Obviously different economic circumstances, but yeah, I've underwritten a few deals this year, and the brokers were even saying, I don't think we'll get anywhere near the asking price, but that's what they want me to go with. And that's what I'm going with. So yeah, I think there's still a realization that sellers, they're a little bit higher than maybe what, you know, a buyer is really interested in. So, because I've seen a number of price reduction emails come out from brokers, yep. Like, hey, yep, we're willing to take a little bit less if you're still interested. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what shakes out. Have you seen it kind of in the mobile home space? Because obviously I've only seen the investor interest in mobile home parks explode over the last kind of few years. Mainly that's because I've just been paying more attention to real estate investing in general. But, you know, I feel like a lot of people are doing mobile home parks and all that. Have you seen a lot more competition in the last 2.5 years since you guys have been really focusing on it?
Yeah, even from like three and a half years ago when we bought that first park, like the interest level is, and I guess just the awareness has gone way up. Just the number of podcasts that have started within the last 2 years has been kind of exponential from the 2 or 3 that were around it from the beginning.
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah. And like the Brandon Turners of the world and Open Door Capital. And as soon as he started talking about the mobile home parks on Bigger Pockets when he was still hosting, I was like, Brandon, no, don't.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I started to look into it. You know, just because you start to hear things, you're like, wait, am I missing something here? Should I be chasing this and going after it? And so I'm sure there's a lot of people that heard that same podcast that I heard and heard him talk about it. And it's like, I guess I should look into mobile home parks. I have no idea what they are or how to monetize them, but, you know, maybe I'll start.
Yeah. So I think that consolidation is happening right now. So from a couple of people that I respect their opinions on that, Ryan Norris's podcast called Mobile Home Parks in Real Life, it's probably the most realistic, like, it's not all roses, like it,
right,
stuff's going to happen. And
so
anyway, he was saying a few months ago that, you know, we're within maybe a 5-year window of this consolidation, because there's big money players and REITs that are buying up bigger parks. I think there's still going to be space for these smaller, like 10 to under 50 spaces that kind of the average person can still find and get into. The biggest ones or the bigger ones, those are being consumed pretty quickly by bigger companies.
Yeah.
Similar to what we saw maybe in self-storage 20 years ago is happening now in the mobile home park space.
Got it. I want to touch a little bit on, so currently you're doing kind of deal by deal syndications, right? So similar to what I do with multifamily, you know, some of the people in the group find a deal. We all think it looks good. We go out to our investors and see who's interested in investing, and they're invested in that specific deal. So it sounds like you said you're starting an open-ended fund.
Yep.
So for those who don't know, you know, maybe talk a little bit about how you kind of made the decision to move into the fund model, and, you know, maybe what are the differences that an investor is going to see from a return perspective? Because obviously, you know, they're going to be giving you money without knowing, okay, what deals are going into, and you're kind of responsible for being putting their money in a good deal kind of a thing. So maybe talk about that.
Yeah, the fund model, it is going to be different. So we're looking for a little bit of a different deal type in there from a financial perspective. So like 10% cash on cash, we're still looking for the 20% IRR or higher. So we have these parameters for the fund. It acts more like a mutual fund. So, and you know, you invest your 100,000, there are mechanisms that you can pull your 100,000 out if you want, but essentially you're buying shares into the fund. And the earlier you buy the shares, like right now, a share is $1, but when we start adding more properties, so we're just about to open up the next raise on our fund in a couple of weeks, shares prices are going to be $1.20 a share.
Got it.
It's reducing the risk by adding these better properties and increasing the, where, you know, the risk is going on them. So it's like kind of more forever returns. Any money that we get from refis or selling a property go back into buying even bigger and better properties. So
that's a different model than I've heard, because typically it's like, you know, you get a pref return and there's limited upside, right? So it's more like it's almost like a debt fund where you kind of put money mm-hmm. in and you get a 8-10% return on that investment yep. kind of forever or until the fund stops, usually maybe 10 years or whatever that is. So that's yeah. a different model. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, you still get the pref is still there for sure. It's still that 8% minimum and with the waterfalls. But yeah, it's designed. And business partner Brett had a mentor that had one of these funds for quite a while, Alturas Homes. They don't need anybody else to come into them. Like they're self-sufficient yeah. and continue to grow. But they've been around for a number of years now. So I think just through that type of mentorship, this model, and it's not to say we won't do syndications again or one-off deals, but right now that's our focus is building properties up through the fund.
Got it. No, that's super interesting. So I want to kind of have you go back and kind of think about, put yourself back in the W-2 kind of mindset. So a lot of people listening to this podcast, as I've mentioned, they're probably listening to this on their commute to work, or maybe they're out for a jog or whatever, but they want different options. What's a good kind of first step to getting into the real estate investing game from a passive perspective? Because obviously mm-hmm. it's easier to get into it passively, right? Because you just kind of need to have cash to do it. But what do you think is kind of a good first step as people start to think about, there's obviously a lot of options out there and there's a lot of people like us that are syndicating deals or mm-hmm. raising money for deals and all that. So what would you think you would recommend?
Yeah, and there's a number of like Facebook groups as well that people can make connections and educate themselves. I'd say we're a member of a group called VeraVest. I don't know if you've heard of them. So they have a platform where they vet like the GPs, like you and I, the companies. So they'll do mm-hmm. background checks, kind of check financials. They have a code of ethics that you agree to. And, you know, we pay a fee for this for them to like verify
us. Have you on the platform. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so sites like that, I think it are probably going to be a safer way for people to enter investing. And so, you know, if they don't know you and it's building trust, building relationships, building track record.
Yep.
And a company like VeraVest can help speed that up for, you know, general partners like us, just help attract LPs.
That's super interesting. I hadn't heard of them. I'll have to find the link and put it in the show notes if people want to check that out. That's something I never heard of. So, you know, one of the things I love about the podcast is I learned yeah. something new from every guest. So it's even good for me too, for sure. And I want to kind of transition, I guess, kind of to the final phase here as we kind of wrap things up. I have kind of a three-pack of questions that I ask every guest. So I want to kind of start with those. So I guess, what's one piece of advice that got you started or helped you along your real estate investing journey?
I think and you hear this all the time on like the Bigger Pockets when they ask what books and stuff, but like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, way back in my 20s, when I read that, that just started kind of lit the fire and the spark of the art of the possible. You know, growing up with, you know, my mom was a school teacher. My dad owned a small business.
Okay.
So he was kind of an entrepreneur as well. So I think just those types of exposures and just to get the idea flow going on a different mindset than punching in and out every day until you're 60 years old or whatever. Yeah. And
No, that's super helpful. And Rich Dad Poor Dad was a book that, I mean, it was literally the book that got me started. I literally listened to it on my walk to work when I lived in Philadelphia, and it was a light bulb. Literally, I was just like, holy crap, what am I doing with my money? What am I doing with my time? I was nervous because I had already started to think about, okay, we need to, you know, I was married at the time and I was like, okay, well, we need to start thinking differently and investing differently. And I was like, oh crap, I hope Allison is like on board. And so luckily she read the book and literally had the same reaction I did. It was like, what the heck are we doing? Like, we need to change our lives. And that's obviously what we've done so far. So no, that book definitely was the light bulb moment for sure.
Yeah. Did you ever play the rat race game?
Yeah. We bought what's it called? Is it called the rat race?
Yeah. Rat race.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we actually bought the game. We played it and then it got to the point where it was like, you kind of knew what to do, right? And then so you kind of gained the system. But yeah, we played that a lot. And actually, it's funny because Monopoly is very similar, like in the concept of like, okay, I need to keep acquiring properties and then I just keep charging people rent and you know, so super fascinating. All right, second question is, what is the best, and you maybe have just said it, what is your favorite real estate or business book that you're into right now?
Traction. And I'm trying to remember the name of who wrote that. Gino Wickman.
I've heard that book.
Traction. Gino Wickman. So Traction. It's Get a Grip on Your Business. So they have a model, this EOC model. So we have transitioned to like the blueprint that he outlines in this book.
Is that like the integrator and
the founder and force
multiplier. Visionary and the integrator. Yeah.
So anyway, we've been able to use a lot of the key elements out of that to help with efficiencies we do a lot of Zoom meetings, things like that. So just how to get action done efficiently from the people that need to be doing it, and like following how to follow up and just have accountability for people within the organization that are doing the good work that gets us where we need to go.
No, that's awesome. Yeah. I don't think I've read that book, but I know the EOS model. I've heard about it before. So yeah, it makes sense. All right. Final question is, if you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you can live an amazing life just off your passive income, what would you do? Mm-hmm.
I'm going to hire people that do all the things I do now so I can travel, just spend time with family and give back to, you know, really the money is going to be great. It will. It'll afford a great lifestyle, but it's really how are we able to give back to others? I love being able to mentor others, people that were where I was 5-6 years ago and just starting to think about it. So people can schedule time with me whenever I have availability, and I'm happy to kind of meet them where they are. Had some great relationships that have lasted a long time. Some I've just been able to kind of help here and there and on their way, but that's really what fulfills me, is being able to help others with whatever goals that they're after.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I think that's brilliant. And I guess as we close out here, how can people kind of get in touch with you? And we'll put all your socials and all that fun stuff in the show notes. But, you know, what's the kind of best way to kind of link up with you?
Yeah. So just our webpage is probably the hub. So it's just suncrestcap.com.
Okay.
That's my email is ryan@suncrestcap.com. You know, just use Calendly to schedule some time, whether you're interested in anything we've talked about or growing your own real estate portfolio or investing. Like if you're interested in investing in these things, happy to talk to you about that too.
Awesome, man. Ryan, I really appreciate you being on the podcast. It's been a pretty awesome adventure kind of learning about your journey going from education to, full-time into commercial real estate and mobile home parks. So no, I really appreciate you being on.
Yeah. Thank you, Justin.
Awesome. No, I hope everybody took something away from this episode, and I've got another one dropping soon. So keep listening. Ryan, man, talk to you soon, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, have a great day.
Yeah.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way, you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.